Right, good evening, guys. It's Coach Triggs here, the founder of 30 Plus Men's Fitness. And I hope you're all doing good. And I'm going to have a guest joining me tonight. So,
all right, dude. So listen, first off, Emil, thanks very much for joining me. I'm going to let Emil introduce himself in a second. I've known Emil a long time, and I've been watching his journey, especially over the last couple of years, seeing him get into like self-development and things like that and building his own fitness business. And I thought to myself, you know, he's got to be in his 30s now, because we met 13 years ago. And I was just starting out, I was like 27, and Emil was like a giant already, but he was like late teens. And yeah, I thought he's got to be in his 30s now. So, Emil, good to have you on. Introduce yourself to the lads.
Yes. Well, yeah, my name's Emil. And as Treggs has said, we've known each other for like 10, 15 years, something crazy, from Cardiff. We met in Dave's gym. So,
yeah. Great gym.
Very, very good gym. And still there. My brother's training out of there at the moment, actually. Yeah. Need to go back and visit. But yeah, so I mean, I've always been into fitness and training. Rugby, I think, was probably what I was doing when I first met you, and then moved into strongman over the years as I progressed. But that was all. I did a medical degree, basically. I from 18 did a medical degree, became a doctor sort of 6 years after that. And although I was always into fitness, always doing fitness, competing in various sports, medicine was my priority, as you can imagine. But you know, through that I was still eating well, training, whatever else. And then in the last 3 or 4 years, it just clicked that medicine wasn't my calling, which is quite a big statement, really. But you know with medicine, what we tend to do is someone has a heart attack and we fix them. But I was like, can we stop them having a heart attack? And, you know, in short, the answer is pretty much yes. Maybe 70 or 80% of illnesses are related to lifestyle, whether that's nutrition, exercise, even sleep and stress, even the kind of more abstract stuff. And, you know, when I did strongman, I was 22 stone, 142 kilos. I was 24, 25. And I was in denial. I was saying, yeah, no, I'm exercising regularly. I'm fit. I'm healthy. And, you know, I was getting out of breath walking up hills, and I was, you know, there were signs of diabetes. You know, it wasn't good. At 24, 25. So it was like, right, I need to get my ass into gear, quite literally. So that's where the kind of nutrition stuff started. And I was like, right, I need to sort myself out before I hit 30. So I hit the ground running when I get here. And you know, here I am.
Yeah.
So that's why I left medicine. And that was 3 years ago. And since then, I've been bouncing around the fitness industry, coaching, you know, hustling, doing all the things.
Yeah.
And in the last 12 months, I've sort of taken it to a different level with traveling, personal development, mindset stuff, as you said. And here I am.
Excellent, dude. All right. Well, look, I'm going to throw some questions at you. I want to start at the beginning, bud. I was just saying to you when we had a little chat beforehand, I think what's really interesting is you come from a medical background. And I think we're in an age now where kind of like this whole, we went through a phase sort of 5-6 years ago, there's a lot of pseudoscience and everyone's buying into it. I bought into a lot of it. And I think now it's becoming more evidence-based. And especially when we're talking about, you know, a lot of my guys are asking me about certain meds and high cholesterol and statins. Things like, you're in a position where you can give an evidence-based answer. Okay. But look, let's start at the beginning. I remember meeting you at Dave's gym. What got you into fitness? Because I always remember you being like a big strapping lad anyway. What got you into it, dude?
You know what? I'll tell you what. That was my parents entirely. So my dad's always been active, running, playing basketball, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, since we were kids, 5, 6, we were skiing, we were rollerblading, playing hockey, you know, outdoor stuff. So they kind of instilled this outdoors fitness lifestyle. Never gym, you know, never gym, but being active. And then, you know, growing up in Wales, rugby is unavoidable. So, you know, played rugby since I was 11, eventually then at sort of 16, 17, got the, you know, the Argos dumbbells in the bedroom. Press ups and bicep curls, running around the park, all that kind of stuff. You know, the standard progression, and then hit university and you know, started training properly, as it were. And then from there, you know, picked up my, I worked in Dave's gym, picked up my gym qualifications throughout university. So it was always there as a backdrop, and I always knew I enjoyed it and knew I wanted to do it. But yeah, that's how it started.
See, this is something that I always say to our followers, especially in my emails, is your kids are always watching. So, and I, you know, I've started to take my eldest, he's six now, he comes with me to boot camp on a Saturday. Even during these school holidays, mate, he would have come to the gym with me every day. But I'm like, John, you don't need to be up at 5 a.m. Like, it's, you know, you need your sleep, champ, you know what I mean? But daddy, I want to come. But I think it's very important. Like, I'm very much about that active lifestyle. Same with me, my partner. And I think I said kids are like sponges, right? They're always watching. They pick up your habits, good and bad, right? So I suppose that upbringing, you very much sort of fell into sports because of the kind of upbringing you had, right?
Yeah, exactly. And it was a case of nothing was ever forced. Nothing was ever, you know, you have to do this. It was just, this is available. We're doing this. We're going outside. Do you want to come?
Brilliant.
You know, if you want rollerblades, if you want a hockey stick, you know, play rugby. And my parents hated rugby. They hated the fact that we were smashing each other up and all this kind of stuff. But bless them, they supported the hell into me. They were there on Sunday mornings in the pissing rain.
Yeah.
You know, but my mum, God, she hated rugby.
So look, dude, let's talk about, I remember when I met you at Dave's gym, and like, you know, you already, you obviously, you've been sort of tall and sort of lean from an early age, right? So did you sort of take to sort of bodybuilding or, you know, resistance training like a little bit of a natural? Because I posted your pictures up earlier, like even as a young lad, you were in good nick, right?
Yeah, exactly. So that first picture with the one you posted, that was 2006. So that was, you know, at most a year into my gym training. So that physique was built on, you know, 10 years of rugby, press ups and running.
Yeah.
So I was always athletic for sure, you know, and I hate talking about genetics, but, you know, my mum's brother used to play basketball. So, you know, I had reasonable genetics, though.
Yes.
That said, you know, the whole endo, meso, exo thing. I've been through all three. You look through my pictures. I've done all three. So, you know, you're not limited by that. And,
hey, Ollie.
And also I was training. I was outside 3, 4, 5 times a week. So, you know, it's not all genetics for sure. But yeah, I mean, I was always into that. And then when I started training, you know, so I went from rugby, but I kept training in the gym. And then I went to mixed martial arts and I kept training in the gym. And then I realized I just liked training in the gym.
Yeah.
And the sports were just almost a distraction. So then I eventually came back to just training in the gym. And that's where Strongman came from, because that was effectively training in the gym. And the events were gym-based events, effectively.
Yeah, I think Dave, that was where I sort of started my PT, and Dave's a great guy, and I remember him, he sort of heavily sort of lent to that strongman. There was like a kind of that sort of influence in Dave just as I was sort of moving on. So, you know, would you say that was the influence of being at Dave's gym that led you into the strongman? And then tell us about that transition, the nutrition. Because I was just saying to you before we started filming, I remember messaging you one evening, because we've known each other a long time. And I was like, dude, you know, I'm watching you, strongman. And you were like, mate, like I'm up now trying to get like my last pint of milk in. And it was like almost midnight. And you were like, this is just awful. I hate it. And I was going, like, I couldn't get my head around what you're doing to yourself. So let's talk about that transition, the nutrition, mate. You just go for it.
So I went from rugby to gym, and gym was my focus. And when it was my focus, it was I was all into the training, all about periodization, strength training, you know, learning all the new techniques and focusing on the training aspect of it for strongman. And that was hugely influenced by Dave's gym. Like, we had a great core of trainers, plus Dave himself. We were always reading papers and books and new training programs and bouncing off each other. It was a great environment for that kind of thing. And, you know, I remember, you know, we had those kegs out in the back. I remember getting those from a pub, filling them with sand.
Love it.
You know, getting a tire. You know, we were building lifting platforms. I think they're still there.
Yeah.
We built those with our hands.
Yeah.
Ridiculous. So I was always into that kind of training, huge influence from Dave. And basically the way I looked at it was, I want to be a strong man. Therefore, so I basically got the top 10 strong men in the world. I found their body weight. I averaged it out and I thought, right, this is what I need to get to. Simple as that.
What were you at the time and what did you need to get to?
So I sort of gravitated up to about 120 kilos just through rugby, which was a reasonably athletic 120 kilos at 6'4". And so the average, the middle was 155 kilos. And I got to 142. And 142, that was through systematic tracking and eating of 6,000 calories a day.
A day.
For years. A day, 6,000 a day. And you know people who say like, oh yeah, I'm a hard gainer, I can't gain weight, I eat 6,000 calories. You don't. I promise you, you don't.
Yeah.
Day in, day out, 6,000 calories is nigh on impossible. It's dedicated eating. I was drinking olive oil. I couldn't eat salad because there was no calories in it. I couldn't eat lean protein because there wasn't enough. It took up too much space. I couldn't drink water. Eating 6,000 calories a day is one, probably not healthy, and two, really, really hard.
Do you know what? It seems like kind of like, because I'm an inherent fat guy and it seems like everyone's dream, right? But then I sometimes see like, let's say on a weekend I'm relaxed and maybe I chuck a few beers in there and a pizza. I've probably had about 4,000 calories today. To get another 2,000 in and to do that day in, day out.
Day in, day out.
Give me an average day's consumption when you were doing strongman. Tell us what that 6,000 calories looks like. What time did you start eating? What time did you finish?
Yeah, I mean, so breakfast was 1,000. I mean, it was 1,000 calorie meals. So breakfast was 1,000 calories, which was usually oats with Nesquik with a pint of full fat milk and a pint of full fat milk on the side.
Definitely.
So one in the oats, one on the side. So yeah, amazing. Perfect. Love that. But then 2 hours later, you need to eat again. So at that point I had a mass shake. So I had 1,000 calories of mutant mass. That was my weapon of choice at the time.
Yeah.
Savage. and then
with milk or water?
It had to be milk. It had to be milk to make up the calories. It was ridiculous.
Brilliant.
So that must have been like 8 o'clock in the morning, then 10 o'clock, then midday 12 o'clock was it used to be one of those microwave pizzas with hummus spread rolled up and then eaten. So that was another 1,000 calories.
You're going in. Yeah.
Training was at 2 o'clock. So didn't eat anything then. That was 2 hours. And then afterwards was another shake, another 1,000 calorie shake. So that's 4,000 calories now. And it's what? It's
like 4 p.m. or something, yeah.
4 p.m. So then 6 o'clock is another, it's an evening meal. I mean, whatever, chili. It couldn't be lean. It was no vegetables. It was literally whatever.
Yeah.
And then probably another shake. So that was then 6 o'clock, 6, 7 o'clock, and then a big shake before bed.
So
you don't stop.
A couple of things. You were a young lad at the time, so I expect finances weren't fantastic. So you're trying to bulk up and you're on a budget as well. I mean, what was your shopping bill like a week? Were you doing this on a shoestring or?
Yeah. You know, so at that point in my life, I decided that food was one of the things that I wasn't going to skimp on.
Right.
I didn't go out drinking. I didn't particularly do much else, to be perfectly honest. I didn't pay for gym membership because I worked at the gym.
Sure.
So ultimately, all I was spending my money on was food. That was literally it. But it was, and you know what? After, I think, third or fourth year of university, I moved home to live with my parents because I did a sports science degree in UWIC, or was UWIC. And my parents lived 50 meters from there. So I moved home, so I wasn't paying rent or anything. So, you know, my lifestyle was around training and eating effectively.
Sure. How did it affect like your things like your, obviously I understand that you're trying to be as strong and as big as possible. How did it affect things like your sleep? Because we're going to talk about sleep later on. We know how important that is. How did that affect like your sleep, your mood, your energy, your clarity?
You know what? Like I was totally in it at the time. I loved it. I loved it. It was an entire lifestyle. And you know what? Like I trained at 2 o'clock. I should have had lectures at 2 o'clock. I was all about the gym. Like every day was around my training and my eating. So I felt pretty good. I was doing exactly what I wanted to do. The food was hard. I felt sluggish and full all the time.
Yeah.
I remember someone inviting me over for food and thinking, because I was a strong man, I'd be able to eat a lot. But I'd eaten 2 hours previously. Like, I had just enough space to get in just about 1,000 calories and no more. So, you know, it was on edge. I mean, I was getting out of breath walking up hills. But, you know, you kind of adapt to it. You kind of just walk slower. You kind of just, you don't stress yourself out. You just kind of get round to it. But the relentless eating, and you know what as well? I was doing it dirty. Like, you can't bulk at that level clean. I mean,
no.
I was...
No, on chicken and...
I didn't even want to eat. No, you can't. I didn't even want to eat chocolate because you had so much you didn't even want. But I was eating like wheels of cheese and stuff. Like, you know, at that level, you don't even need to worry about protein. Because you get enough, you could get enough protein.
I remember you had a big thing of brie. A wheel of brie. And it's like Christmas every day.
it was savage.
You obviously gained quite a lot of body fat at a young age.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I was. You know, I kept telling myself I was strong. There was loads of muscle, and there was for sure. But I was fat. There was loads of fat, and I wouldn't do it the same. You know what? It was super interesting because I loved it. I wasn't self-conscious in the slightest. I was top off. I was, you know, in that photo. That was a fancy dress night. That was me going to town like that. You know, I didn't give a shit. I was loving it. But that's really interesting because it's much. And then when I was a bodybuilder, 2 weeks out of show, I wouldn't take my top off, shredded to the bone, but totally self-conscious. So it reinforced to me that body confidence and self-image and how you feel has almost nothing to do with your actual shape. People pursue abs to improve their confidence.
Yeah,
it's they're not necessarily related. That is entirely within. And your shape is almost irrelevant. I mean, people think that when they get abs, they'll be happy, they'll be more confident. They're not necessarily related. It's entirely within your head.
Yeah. Bear with me one sec, mate. I'm just going to tell my family at home a second. Give us 2 seconds. I'm going to time.
Oh, no.
Hold on a sec.
Of course. We have lost it. Now, I'm going to try and log in so I can see the comments as well. Let's see if I can do this.
Right, I'm back, mate.
Oh, there we go.
It's like everyone's come in and they've just connected to the internet. And it's like... So you basically did Strongman for how many years? How did you get on?
Yeah, so I did actually really, really well at Strongman. I did it for probably about 2 years. I did 1 year of proper competing, but 1 year probably to bulk up. And then the last year was probably me trying to get heavier. I sort of said to myself, look, unless I can get to that 155 kilos, I'm not going to compete anymore because I'm not competitive. But I also started work as a junior doctor, so there was it just all fell apart.
And how'd you eat then? You know what I mean?
And you know, training was off, stress levels were higher, and it was just my lifestyle previously was built entirely around training and eating.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden I had a full-time job and it was beyond a full-time job. So it was just like, this is not going to work. They're not compatible at the level I wanted.
So let's talk about that transition out of the strongman stuff and into the, obviously the stage stuff, like the way you said, we've got absolutely shredded. And I think that's people know you for now because you look fantastic and very low levels of body fat. So let's talk about the transition from going, you know, high body fat, high calories, and changing to such an extent that you end up shredded and very low levels of body fat. Let's talk about that, dude.
So I got to start working as a doctor. It wasn't compatible with my training, and I was unhealthy. I remember being on placements and just doing, I think, my blood pressure while I was a medical student on placement, and it was high. And I was like, oh, it's just a one-off reading. And then I did another test, and that was a bit off as well. And I was like, you know, I can't, this is, I'm in denial now. This is not good.
Yeah.
So I was like, right, for health, I'm going to start losing body fat. And, you know, back in the day, 2011, I went low carb. you know, Atkins style. And I lost a shitload of weight. I was weak as hell in the gym. I stopped training strength, but a load of weight came off. And that was fine. And then I cruised for a couple of years, training, eating, but working. I was a doctor and I was enjoying it. I still trained, but I lost my fitness drive then because I was no longer competing. And then actually I got injured as well. I had a lower back injury because I was pretending I was still strong. I wasn't. I did a deadlift with bad technique. My lower back went. It was 18 months out. It was horrendous.
Wow.
My whole left leg went numb and started to sort of atrophy. Like it was pretty serious. Right. Don't deadlift without concentrating. Yeah. So that was a couple of years. And then I, because of that injury, I was super focused on training with perfect form, with not lifting anywhere near my one rep max, just lifting super, super safe. And that's how I then got into bodybuilding.
Yeah.
I moved to Bristol with my work. I moved to within a mile of Ministry of Fitness.
Yeah.
Totally coincidentally. And over the sort of year and a half that I was here, I got to know Tom, who owns the gym, and we started training together. And it was basically a crash course in bodybuilding. It was the total opposite of what I'd done as a strongman. It was sort of body part split, super focused training, all about the pump, all about the mind muscle connection. And for me, it was just exciting because it was a different way of training.
Yeah.
So I wasn't dieting at this point. I was still just learning. I had no intention of ever competing. I was still working as a doctor, but I had a bit of a focus and a drive. And then from there, I started to get the feelings that I wasn't supposed to be a doctor, that I wasn't, this wasn't my calling. And it was kind of like, it was basically one day I was in work and I was talking to one of the bosses, and the boss was sort of, you know, complaining about her situation or something. And I was like, this is my apparent end goal. This is what I aspire to be. And
yes,
and they're not happy. They're not, I don't want to be there. And as soon as that twigged, because up until that point, I was waking up every morning buzzing. I was buzzing. I was going to work. I was learning new things. I was loving it. And then that stopped. And for me, that has been fundamental. Like, I refuse to wake up and not be excited.
Sure.
So that stopped. And I was like, right, I need a get out plan. So that's when I started working about, this must have been November 2014.
And this is crazy because, like, you know, you've gone into become a doctor. Like, this is a this is a career. This is like 5, 6, 7 years of training.
Yeah.
Wow,
yeah.
And that must have been a real light bulb moment.
I mean, it was crazy. I mean, because as you say, it was a long, long time, and I eased myself into it. I said, I'm just gonna take a year out to find my way. I'm just going to, you know, I kept convincing myself I had always had a backup plan, basically. I always had a way back in if I needed it. I've never even looked back, incidentally, but I always had it there. So then I was training bodybuilding. I was dieting again, just for fun, just to see what happened. Again, low carb, just learning about nutrition, because now training was on the back burner. I'd done all my strength training periodization. Now it was all about nutrition. And then in, I think, February of 2015, I went to an event in Cardiff Sports Nutrition. And there was Sean Stafford, who's a fitness model. He was there and I spoke to him and he was like, you should compete. And I was like, well, why not? Literally like that. And I booked a competition in April and one in May while I was still working as a doctor, while I was still... I was revising for medical exams. I had a medical career in my head, but I had this get out plan.
Sure.
And then I was thinking, right, so if I'm going to get out in August, which is when the medical training ends, I'm going to hit the ground running. So I was building my social media. I was competing. I was like, right, I've got loads of science. You know, I've done a medical degree. I've done a sports science degree. I've done all my qualifications. How am I going to make people listen to me? I'm going to get abs and I'm going to compete.
Yeah.
So that's why I competed. And you know what? Those 4 or 5 months before I left in 2015 were the hardest 4 or 5 months of my life, because I was revising for an exam. I was doing 12-hour shifts, an hour, you know, 2-hour commute every day. I was sleeping 4 hours a night. I was drinking far too much coffee.
Coffee, yeah.
and it was I was pushing myself to my limits, beyond my limits. I broke down a number of times, but
really?
I just persevered. I did pretty well at all that. I mean, I didn't win anything, but I got the photos, I got the stage shots, I got into ridiculous shape.
Let me jump in there to tell the lads about that kind of journey as you got closer and closer, and the type of, you know, the training that was involved, and your calories, and how much cardio you were doing, and where you were. Like you said, you almost had a breakdown a few times.
Yeah.
Tell us what body fat percentage did you get down to, dude?
Yeah, so I'd gotten pretty lean previously, and you know what? Each time I dieted, the first time was after Strongman, the second time was a practice in 2014, then the third time was this competition prep. Each time it was easier. I got down quicker. I got down to lower levels. I got down eating a wide variety of food and more carbohydrates. And this was when flexible dieting was a thing. And I was working with Ryan Evans, again, another Dave's Gym old hat. And so the big thing for us was not just to get ready for a bodybuilding show. We knew how to do that, but we were going to do it flexibly. We were going to do it while eating carbs, while eating chocolate, while eating Pop-Tarts, while eating a wide variety of normal food. So that was the trick. Calories were restricted, and it's all about calorie balance and protein. So these are the things we were hammering. You know, this was 3 years ago. This was before this was the norm. Everyone was still talking about clean eating and meal plans. Of course. But you know what, like, to get to those levels of body fat, there's minimal messing around. You have to do a load of cardio, you have to do low calories, and you have to do it for a long time. Training weights takes a back seat when you're on prep, when you're on a diet like that. You just do it. You do it for enjoyment. You don't try and progress anything. You get in the gym, you lift some weights, you get a pump, and you get it done. And that's literally all you're doing. You can't progress when you're hammering yourself that hard, especially because I was getting no sleep and stuff. But it was hard. It was brutal, but I got into crazy shape, and I had a DEXA scan a few weeks after my show, and I got to about 5%, 5% body fat. Yeah.
And what did you weigh?
That was 112 kilos.
And how tall are you? Just tell the guys, you're a tall lad.
6'4".
6'4", you were down to 112 kilos.
It was heavy. Wow. It was
5%.
Heavy.
I mean, what does that feel like? I mean, I've never been there. I mean, what does that feel like?
Pointless, utterly pointless. it looks amazing in pictures. You're totally pointless in the gym. You're at a level of body fat where your fat is so low that you're no longer producing adequate hormones.
Sure.
So you're not producing thyroid, you're not producing testosterone. You feel you're constantly tired. You've got maybe a couple of hours of energy each day. I recommend you never do it. It's a great achievement, and you know what, it's a great achievement. I wouldn't do it differently, but I don't think I'll ever do it again. And you know, you say 112 kilos, so the reason I had that much mass was because I did the brutal strongman bulk. And that was training 3 to 4 times a week, not much, like much less, but just full body compound heavy sessions. I didn't even train up a body for that time. I just did squats, deadlifts, and push press. And push press for me was throwing it up with my ass. There was no shoulder involvement. So that's how I built it. And you know what, looking back, I wouldn't do that again.
But
I wouldn't recommend it, but it worked.
It's great, you know, to see you've done it, haven't you, from that to that.
It pushed me to borderline diabetes, but by God, it put a shitload of muscle on, you know.
Wow, that's interesting. Wow. Okay, so look, I want to finish up talking about this part of things, like where you're at now with your dieting and your training. And then we're going to go more into sort of the mindset. We're going to talk about how nutrition has changed over the years, protocols, talk about sleep, maybe get into a little bit more of the medical side of things. But this is going really well. I really appreciate your time, bud. So where are we at now with everything, with your training? Because you hold a great shape all year round. Where are we at, bud?
So I competed 2015 to 16, 16 to 17. So 2 years plus the prep, maybe 2.5 years in total. I did 4 or 5 shows. I went pro in Miami Pro. Again, the diets became easier. They became more flexible. They became much more chilled out each time as I was learning. And you know what? Interestingly, this is what I say to my clients. When you diet the first time, you'll get to a point. Maintain after that. And then when you diet the next time, it'll be easier. You'll get further. You'll maintain it more easily. So persevere. Yeah. Maintenance isn't a waste of time. Just keep going. Mm-hmm. So I finished all of that last August and I stopped competing, stopped doing photo shoots. And since then I've been on a drive to go to not track my intake, to not, you know, be overly obsessive with dieting and just to try and cruise intuitively. And I know this is a buzzword at the moment.
Yeah.
And I don't want to use it too frivolously, but you know, I've been dieting a long, long time. I can pretty much eyeball exactly what's in food. So I was cruising intuitively for about 12 months, basically, and keeping in a good shape, maybe 9-10% body fat. So yeah. Abs, my training was entirely for fun. I trained for social. I trained for fun. I didn't train to be strong. I didn't train to grow. I just trained because I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And then only recently did I do my keto experiments. But
yes.
Apart from that, I've been totally just cruising with it.
Yeah. Okay. So this is really interesting because obviously, you know, in the industry, we've both been around for a while and we see these different trends. And I often talk about when I did my personal training diploma in 2006, we were not told about calories. We were told about the different types of macronutrients and we were told about the food pyramid. And literally, yeah. I was putting, you know, school mums on 6 portions of carbohydrate a day and they were getting fat when I started. Because it was like, you know, there's the food pyramid and the base of it should be carbs. And then it kind of, it moved. And I remember that it sort of changed as I moved. And I was based out of a CrossFit gym and it went very paleo. And, you know, I did the paleo diet before the kids come along. It was great. And I got great results. But then tried doing something as restrictive as that when you've got kids and biscuits in the house. And then it moved into the clean eating. And then that was uber restrictive. That's even harder trying to be a clean eater when you've got kids. And now it's flexible dieting. And I think I've said we live in quite a refreshing time because you can track your calories. Everything's got a barcode on it. We've all got Fitbits and Garmin, so we can track our steps. We can track our sleep. We can, you know, it's never been an easier time. And we've got this gamification now where we can compete with our friends on step challenges and all that kind of thing. But here's something we were talking about is that this whole ketogenic diet seems to be getting, it's like, let's all bash keto. So I'm really interested. One of the reasons I wanted to get you on, selfishly, mate, is I wanted to get your take on it because I know you've been doing a keto experiment these last couple of weeks. And I think, like you said before, calories, protein are king, but you were doing it more as an experiment to see what kind of results you get from a cognitive perspective. And, you know, I know from having done like sort of more of a higher fat, higher protein, lower carb diet that, you know, even though I love bagels, my energy is sometimes a lot better off them, especially when I'm up early in the morning. My ghrelin is quite high anyway. So how's the keto experiment going, bud?
You know, exactly. You've hit the nail on the head there. The trends come and go over the years. And ultimately, we know that calories are the most important thing. And protein is very, very important as well. Apart from that, everything has massively diminishing returns. You can lose body fat just eating donuts and controlling your calories. You know, there's millions of things, you can Google them. So with keto, my goal was entirely not to focus on fat loss. I've done low carb diets in the past. They worked because I was in a calorie deficit. So the reason for my keto experiment on this occasion was that I was observing that there were people out there doing keto, and these were intelligent people who I respected, and they were doing it despite this overwhelming fitness backlash saying keto is a load of crap, whatever else.
And all that kind of thing. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. And you know what? The fitness industry loves to sort of band together and throw rocks at things. And you know, vegans get it, keto gets it, paleo gets it, CrossFit gets it, everyone gets it, Slimming World, whatever. And I'm when there's so much noise, when there's hugely polarized opinions, I know that neither camp is right. the keto people are like, you know, keto is amazing. You burn body fat like anything, you know, it cures cancer and all this kind of stuff. And the other guys are like, keto is a load of crap. It does nothing. It's, you're a ketard and all this stuff. And I'm like, right, what's the truth?
Brilliant.
And I did the same for the vegan experiment last year. I went vegan for a month, blood test before and after, and just took a totally unbiased view of it. Same with keto.
Brilliant.
So I did it without, I know what fat, how it works for fat loss. It works through a calorie deficit. One of the benefits is that it causes potentially hunger suppression, which means you don't want to eat more, which means you might be able to get away with not tracking. So this is why people then believe that calories don't count for keto. Calories count for sure. But if you're not tracking, if you're pursuing health seeking activities, or I'm on a diet, I'm going to walk more, I'm going to start training, I'm going to only eat healthy food. And also you're hugely restrictive. You can't eat most snacks and treats on keto. So your calories are reduced almost automatically. So you can probably do it without tracking. So anyway, that was one of the big benefits, was hunger suppression. The other big benefit, which I read about, was this improved focus and improved cognition. And those things for me were hugely interesting. And I finished my experiment, I think 2 weeks ago, and I found exactly that. My appetite was suppressed. I wasn't eating sometimes until 5:30. And that was with a training session at 11 in the morning. Didn't eat before, didn't eat after, ate at 5:30. And I just focused, woke up super sharp throughout the day, super sharp for training, and then ate and you know, it was absolutely fine. And the biggest thing that it gave me actually was freedom, as in I wasn't thinking, what am I going to eat for breakfast? What am I going to prepare? How am I going to track it? It was literally one meal a day. I ate as much as I wanted. I tracked it and it was well within calories because I was only eating one meal a day, you know? So
you even did the bulletproof coffee, didn't you? Oh, you did bulletproof coffee, dude.
I did bulletproof coffee and everything, you know, and I'm happy to embrace these things and happy to see. And if you consider bulletproof coffee for fat loss, it's utterly idiotic. You're drinking a 500 calorie drink and expecting it to burn fat. However, if you're using it for the other benefits, which is, I mean, certainly MCTs, medium chain triglycerides, have potential benefits. They're rapidly absorbed. They're rapidly used. They help with fasting and they help with cognition potentially. So in the day I was having coffee with MCTs and they were sort of tiding over this fast, which meant then I wasn't eating until 5:30. And a tablespoon of MCTs is 130 calories. So two of those in a day means I'm consuming 260 calories until 5 o'clock in the evening.
Yeah. Yeah.
So for me, that was a no brainer. It's like, if I feel amazing doing this, then I'm going to go with it. Like, I was interestingly eating a calorie maintenance. So I was still eating 4,000 calories a day and I wasn't dropping fat because I was eating a maintenance, despite the magical properties of keto.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was super interesting. And so I got my blood test back literally a week, less than a week ago, a couple of days ago. And I've just written up the blog for MediChex. But my cholesterol, much the same. My ratio actually improved. My testosterone actually went up a little bit. So yeah, super interesting results. Certainly I didn't die, you know?
Yeah. And I think, you know, the thing is I always say this to clients, look, don't knock things until you try it. We know calories are king, like, you know, let's not away from that. But if you have issues with potentially overeating, you snack a lot, and doing something like a higher fat diet, a ketogenic diet, can help you with your hunger, then you're onto a winner. And something I've noticed is that with my earlier starts, if I'm up coaching earlier, my ghrelin levels are higher, like I said. If I was starting the morning with, say, like a cream cheese, a bagel or something like that, which is lovely, 450 calories, you know, bread's not going to make you fat and all this. But I found that I was hungrier very soon after. So for the last couple of weeks, I've actually swapped that and had some salted nuts, the same amount of calories, and gone, wow, actually, I'm not getting hungry here. So we know calories are king, but if trying something like that is going to just give you an insight into actually how you can feel, because it's all about how we feel at the end of the day. Everyone wants more energy. Everyone wants to be clearer. And I have found that when I've done things like that in the past, I've felt great. So, you know, don't knock it until you've tried it. So look, let's talk about the vegan experiment, because there's a lot of vegan bashing in my community, but we've got people that are trying it. My missus went vegan She went vegan a year ago, and she actually is very refreshing because she doesn't go around telling everyone about it. She just did it. And she absolutely loves it. She did it for moral reasons. She loves it. But why did you do it, and how did you get on?
Yeah, so I did it because of the noise in the industry. People, vegans, are claiming these ridiculous benefits. It's amazing for fat loss. It's amazing for, it cures cancer, whatever else. And then the fitness crowd were like, no, vegans are a load of crap. You're deficient in vitamins. You can't get enough protein, all this kind of stuff, all this noise, all the standard stuff you see in memes and things. And it just becomes a rock throwing competition. So I was like, right, let's see what the fuss is about. So I went vegan overnight for 4 weeks, blood tests before and afterwards. And the key things I wanted to see was, is it any healthier? Is it any better for getting lean? And is it possible to get enough protein in?
Yes.
So both sides. So I stuck to my same macros while vegan. It's not any healthier because, so the biggest thing I found was that vegetables are really good for you and you should eat a lot of vegetables. Now this isn't unique to veganism.
No.
And you can actually do this as a normal person.
Yeah.
And I highly recommend it. Now what I found was also that having some animal products isn't unhealthy. So eating 10, 20, 30% of animal products, lean proteins, whatever else, is healthy and makes the whole diet much, much easier to follow. So that was the biggest thing with veganism, very restrictive.
Yes.
If you're thinking, I want to lose fat, I want to get healthier, then I highly recommend stay away from going vegan because it's very difficult. And actually you'll find you'll almost devolve to easy snack foods, which are high in calories. And even though they're vegan, they're no healthier.
Yeah.
Being vegan and being healthy as a vegan is hard work because your food is so restricted, because you need to cook more, and because there is potential for deficiencies in vitamins and minerals.
Yeah.
If you are morally inclined, then veganism is entirely for you. It's much better for the animals, for sure.
Yeah. Yes.
So, you know, if that's your motivation, then go for it. If your motivation is health or anything else, then I recommend against it. And the biggest thing is you can get enough protein. It's hard. It's
really
difficult, but it's possible.
So you run 4,000 calories, and how much protein doing vegan?
I was eating about 200 to 250 grams of protein, which
how?
Is about what I stick to. So I used a lot of pea protein shakes, 100%. But
yep.
But the way you need to do it is instead of like on a normal diet, you have a protein and then you have carbs and then you have fat and you sort
yep.
of I'll have chicken and I'll have potato and I'll have some olive oil or butter or whatever. When you're vegan, you have to plan everything around protein if you want
right.
to hit it. So if you want beans, then the beans contain protein and carbs, and by the time you've got enough protein, you've probably also got enough calories, so
right.
you can't add anything to it.
Right, right.
Same with tofu. You've got protein, you've got fat. Once you've got enough protein, you can't have really anything added to it. So, and you also need to go a bit off-piste. You need to be thinking like broccoli has a little bit of protein, so I'm going to put that in. That's going to add a bit. You know, this has got a bit of protein. This has got a bit of protein, all this kind of stuff. So you need to be more inventive, and it's much more difficult. But it's possible for sure, but
yep.
very difficult.
Interesting stuff. Okay, bud. So this is really good so far. We're holding good audience. Guys, please keep giving us a like and a share as you come on. I want to talk about another sort of 10 minutes if we could, buddy. And
yeah.
one thing I want to get into now is I don't really like the word holistic, but one thing I've noticed a change in you following you over the couple of years is that you admitted that you used to survive on very little sleep. I'd always see you popping up, you know, with your caffeine, your Monster, et cetera, et cetera. And we all have those days where we need a Monster pre-workout. But you're very much into your sleep now. And I know that you've read a book by a guy called Matthew Walker called Why We Sleep. And I want to get into that because this is like when we talk about, you know, you're a medical man. And one thing you said at the start of this interview was most diseases, heart attacks and, you know, things like this can be cured through nutrition and lifestyle. And now, I'm a great believer in sleep. A lot of my friends take the mic and say, you know, Treg, you're always sleeping. But I've said this. I built my business on hard work and power naps. And even before the kids come along, I would schedule in a Wednesday afternoon where I would go home from the gym and I would have no clients between the time of 12 and 5, and I'd go back to bed. And I'm a professional sleeper. I'm talking about blackout blinds, earplugs, a fan, an eye patch, the lot. Like the most, that's very important to me. And my missus is the same. I think it's one of the reasons why we're drawn together. But, and I've always known, you know, people say, oh, sleep when you're dead and all this kind of thing. But I would rather go around feeling great and energized because I've had enough sleep, because I take naps, than going around feeling miserable, making poor quality nutrition choices because I'm so tired, and generally lacking any creativity and spark. Now, I listened to Joe Rogan's podcast yesterday with Matthew Walker. He's a very articulate guy. He spoke for 2 hours, and some of the stuff blew my mind. And one of the things he said was, is that sleep is like a legal performance-enhancing drug that we refuse to take or get enough of. And that was just like, wow. And he went on to talk about that you could have the best preparation for an endurance event or something like that. You could be the fittest guy. But if you have 4 hours crap sleep the night before, your performance can drop by anything by up to 70%. Another thing he spoke about was if you're a man and you're consistently getting 5 to 6 hours sleep or less a night, your testosterone will be that of somebody 10 years older. That blew me away, dude. And I'm looking at my diary now going, I'm just going to fucking sack off all my early morning clients. Talk to me, dude. Talk to me about sleep.
So you're right. So back in the day, back in that 2014-15 period, I developed this system of sleeping fast. There weren't enough hours in the day. So I had, as I said, 10 hours in the hospital, 2 hours commute, 2 training sessions to do plus revision, plus build a business. There's not enough hours. No. So I developed a system where I went to bed at midnight. I was asleep within 3 minutes of going to bed. I then woke up at 4 a.m. Having slept solid for that time. As soon as I woke up, I was up and out of bed and I was working. So I was sleeping fast. And that was an Arnold Schwarzenegger quote.
Wow.
And you can survive on this for a long time. Survive. And that was purely to get more hours in the day. I highly recommend against it. I think it's awful. But what it did do is it developed my sleep hygiene. It got me into sunrise alarm clocks. It got me into the habits of getting off to sleep quickly and all these things. And I was getting very good at sleeping, just I wasn't sleeping enough. And this kind of, you know, this persisted. And I because I did night shifts, I was also a sleep ninja. So I was blackout blinds, white noise. So I was always into all this kind of stuff, but fundamentally I wasn't sleeping enough. And then I heard that podcast.
Yeah.
And everything I'd been listening to, doing, reading, just came together. And I was like, right, this is, and the big thing he said was less than 6 hours isn't enough. People are like, you know, 3-4 hours, whatever, but 6 hours isn't enough. You need 7.5. And you know, then he was talking about all those people who got by on minimal sleep, Margaret Thatcher, Ronald Reagan, both suffering from Alzheimer's. And I was like, I've been doing night shifts for the last 3 years. Like, this is unacceptable. And everything just changed. It's just simple as that. And I was like, right, I'm from now on going to get enough sleep. And I was in a position where I could.
Yes.
So I quit night shifts. I stopped setting an alarm in the morning. And I was just like, right, now sleep is, I think, have I got it? No, I literally rewrote my priorities. And the first one was sleep.
Yeah.
It's just because unless it's your top priority, it's your 10th, it's your 20th. So you just have to.
Go on, sorry.
Sorry, go on. You just have to prioritize it.
Was he actually said, and I don't know where he got these stats from, there are more deaths from people falling asleep through tiredness at the wheel than there are from drink and drugs combined, which I found fascinating.
Yeah.
And one of the things he spoke about was we live in an age where actually it's becoming harder and harder to sleep because we're the iPad generation, the iPhone generation. We've got these lights staring at us until right before we go to bed, which actually delays the onset of things like melatonin. And
Absolutely.
Then we're up early, the alarm goes, we're rushing out of the door. Sometimes we're getting the kids up earlier to get them into kids' club, and everything just suffers. And, you know, people say, hustle, grind. And you see all these fit pros doing it, and it's like, yeah, hustle, and who needs sleep? And you're like, and he said, well, you'll pay for it because you're going to die early or you're going to get Alzheimer's.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's the whole sleep when you're dead thing is utter crap. I mean, if you consider when you say you sleep 4 hours, you have an extra 4 hours in the day, but all of the, what is it, 20 hours that you're awake are less than 50%. You're not even there. You're a zombie. Yep. Whereas if you sleep 8.5 or, you know, 7.5 to 9 hours, then every single minute that you're awake, you are switched on and firing. Productivity, you know, happiness, sense of interaction, everything. You're operating on a different level. And I've been reading a lot about deep work and flow states and stuff. And if you're tired, you've got no chance in hell of getting there. Yeah. So it's not that you're getting more hours by sleeping less. You're literally getting less. Yeah. Each hour is worth twice when you've had enough sleep, whereas it's worth less than half when you haven't.
I mean, they say that the sleep deprivation is torture. And I can tell you that having two kids, the first couple of years in that hospital, absolutely no sleep at all. Everything went to pot. My training, oh, it's just hell. It's just hell. And, you know, I remember when they first started to sleep through and I was just like, oh, you know, you can get life back. You can start, you know, enjoying life again. Do you know what I mean? Okay. So, dude, I want to get onto one last subject and then we're going to, I really appreciate it. So we must have been going for a good 45 minutes to an hour now. Is obviously you come from a medical background. You've seen, the obesity epidemic. You've probably seen people coming in having heart attacks. Tell me a little bit about what you've seen and lifestyle factors which are leading to disease and early death, and what can we do to sort it? What can somebody do to sort it?
So modern medicine is amazing at emergencies. It's amazing if you've been in a car crash. I mean, it's second to none for that kind of stuff. It's never been better. What it's not good at is the 70 or 80% of lifestyle diseases, diabetes, obesity, strokes, heart attacks, arthritis, you know, all of these things. So many cancers are affected by lifestyle factors. The problem is there's not enough. There's not enough time, there's not enough resources to dedicate towards it. What the NHS does is it looks at how much of an effect a pill has, how cost effective it is to prevent numbers. It's all a numbers and statistics game. Whereas actually what you need to do is put the investment in 40 years earlier with lifestyle interventions. Yeah. But the problem is you can't measure the benefit of these. The benefit is infinite, I promise you that.
Yeah.
But you can't measure it. And the resources required to implement it are, again, almost infinite. So what I'm seeing is people coming in, having made a lifetime of poor lifestyle choices. And things like heart attacks in their 50s are considered normal. Like, oh, I got diabetes because my, you know, my father had it. And I'm kind of like, that's not normal. Like, you shouldn't have a heart attack. A heart attack isn't a normal state for a human. The normal state for a human should be to live to your 80, bouncing around, frolicking in fields and, you know, dying in your sleep one night. Yeah, that's normal.
Yeah.
And actually, by the time we get old, we should be living to 130, you know? So the modern medicine just isn't equipped to fix it. So we need to take responsibility for ourselves. We need to dominate our nutrition, move every day. You don't have to train in a gym. You don't have to do anything crazy or heroic. You just need to move. You need to get your sleep in. That's so important. That's up there with training and nutrition.
Yep.
And actually, you need to focus on the mind as well. And this isn't hippie woo-woo crap. This is fundamental to happiness and health. If you sort out your mind, everything else falls into place. And these are sort of four prongs of a chair. You can't take one away. The whole thing will collapse.
Yeah. And I think, you know, when I've spoken about this in the past, and I say this to the guys all the time, guys, I feel like I'm a broken record because I tell you every day, you know, like hydration, sleep, get outside and just move and try and de-stress. You know, if you're not sleeping, stop watching Netflix till midnight, come off, you know, scrolling Instagram. It's fun. I know we all get it. But if your life is suffering because of it, and it's very, very simple, there's no magic pill, there's no, you know, magic shake or anything like that, but you know, just focusing on getting to bed earlier, getting a better night's sleep, focusing on being hydrated, focusing on just getting outdoors. Like, no wonder like people are depressed, you know, they're just sat at home watching TV, not getting any fresh air all day. But it's the fundamentals. People go, oh, you know, that's boring.
Yeah, and it's boring and it's hard work, you know, like moving every day is hard work when it's cold and wet outside. I mean, it's the middle of August, but it's cold and wet outside.
Yeah.
No one wants to go outside. No one wants to, you know, they're tired, they're stressed. It's much easier just to, you know, flick on Facebook or watch Netflix. But you're literally dying. Every day you do that, you're dying. Like, lifestyle just sort of, you're crunching over more and more. You're kind of, you're just building these like imbalances and just badness. And what you need to do is every day open up, move, just eat, you know, fuel your body with good foods, replenish your body, rest your body, all these kind of like super hippie things. But
yeah,
that's what we're meant to do. And it's hard work, but you just need to, it's non-negotiable. You cannot barter with it. You have to do it.
Yeah. And I think, you know, again, I speak a lot about this. I don't like the word holistic, but this approach. And you should wake up with energy. You should be enthusiastic about the day. You should be going around in a happy state. And it's funny. It's like I've quite often said, you know, when it comes to my exercise and nutrition, I might find myself in like a really crappy mood for no reason. And that might have just been because I've had some beers or something like this on the weekend. But you just say, oh, it's not that. And then within 2 days of better nutrition, better sleep, better hydration, better movement, you're feeling amazing. And like, I didn't win the lottery in that last 48 hours. Nothing fundamentally changed in my life. It's just I looked after myself better. And now I feel great. And I think that people think they should be going around in this kind of like exhausted state. No, you shouldn't. You should have energy, right?
Yeah, exactly. And it's the same with, you know, illnesses, people expecting to be unwell. It's like people are expecting to wake up, you know, the alarm, feel tired, you know, drag themselves into work. And the problem is because everyone else is doing it, it's just considered a societal norm. And everyone, anyone who's like happy and bouncing around is just like, you know, who's this twat? Why are they? Who do they think they are being happy? Like, oh, you come down and, moan about life with us.
Yeah, but break from the norm, man. Yeah.
Exactly. Break from it. Be happy. Like, don't associate with people who drag you down. Just do your thing, own it, and enjoy it.
Brilliant. Dude, this has been really great, mate. I'm really grateful for your time, mate. Before we sign off, I always let anyone that comes on and gives me their time, because that's the most valuable thing you have. Just tell everyone, like, what you're up to, where they can find you. I know you've got a massive following on Instagram. That's where it seems to be really happening right now. So just, you know, totally tell the guys where they can find you, and then we will sign off.
Yeah, so, I mean, you'll have my Facebook through the link with this. I shared it as well, and I'm in the group anyway. Yeah. Instagram is at Project Goliath. And I also have a website at www.DrEmil, and that's full DrEmil.com, which is where all my stuff is. But I'm always banging around the internet.
Brilliant. Awesome, mate. Emil, I really appreciate your time, dude. We'll have a little check-in on WhatsApp now after this. I'm going to share this out there. Guys, I really hope you got some value from this. So leave a comment. Emil, great to talk to you, mate. It's been long
absolute pleasure.
And I'll talk to you in a bit, mate. All right. Cheers, mate.
Catch you in a bit. Thank you so much.
Bye, mate.